Hello, and thanks for listening to the Kept Faith Podcast. I'm Nick McCann. I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Hey, go Padres, Nick. It's looking like we're going to be headed for a really good season coming up. I'm very excited right now to be a Padres fan.
Yeah, 2021 is going to be huge.
Huge.
We're also joined by Dallas McLaughlin.
I don't know, guys. I miss the Klesko era.
Oh, you do? Yeah, we'll probably get into that later. Well, we have a very, very special guest on today. He's been in the San Diego region as a broadcaster since the 70s, and he's a big part of the Padres family. His name is Bob Chandler, and he's here. What's going on?
Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm always available to talk baseball, and especially Padres baseball.
Great. Yeah, I mean, it's a big week this week for Padres baseball. You know, we're going to be saying goodbye to another legend in the broadcasting booth, Ted Leitner. What was your experience getting to know Ted over the years?
Well, Ted joined the broadcast crew in, I believe it was 1980. And eventually, we started these cable telecasts, and Ted and I were the two announcers on the cable. So we did all of the forms, regular television, cable television, and radio. And we worked together for about 20 years. And I did not know he was getting set to retire. Didn't know until yesterday when it was announced.
Yeah. Well, what was it like for you? I mean, you know that moment very well. That, you know, the moment where you have to say goodbye to an audience that you've built a relationship with over the years. What was that moment like for you?
Listen, there's no heavy lifting in a job as a Major League Baseball announcer. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed every minute. Sometimes the travel wears down on you, especially if you have children at home. And I did. I had four daughters. I was lucky that I had a wife who was into baseball almost as much as me. And so she did a great job bringing up those girls while I was in Cincinnati or Philadelphia or Montreal or wherever.
Hey, Bob, I'd love to know, like, when you got started with the Padres, in broadcasting in general, was that something that you always wanted to do, or did you just kind of fall into it?
Yeah, Dallas, I come from a military family. My dad was a naval officer. So every few years we move around to wherever he got stationed. So I finished my high school career in Newport, Rhode Island. And of all the places we lived, I had liked San Diego the best, so I came 3,000 miles from Newport to San Diego to go to school at San Diego State, and I thought, well, I'm going to be a great baseball player, so I went out to baseball practice at San Diego State, and it took about 20 minutes for me to realize, wow, these guys in Southern California are really good. I could tell they were much better than me, so I was a scout, a good scout. I made the decision then, well, I'm not going to be a player, so the next best thing is to be a baseball announcer. So I started working at it from my freshman year on at San Diego State. And Dallas, that was 1956.
Wow.
Oh, just yesterday.
Yeah. So Bob, you start with the Padres in 1970, and then 2 years later, you start broadcasting with Jerry Coleman, correct? Is that the timeline?
Yeah, that's right. I had been a television sportscaster in San Diego. Mm-hmm. Actually started at Channel 8 in 1961, the CBS station in San Diego, as a newsreel cameraman writer. You know, you get your foot in the door any way you can. Mm-hmm. I eventually transitioned to sports and worked in TV sports. And in 1970, the station where I was the sports director got the rights to televise the games. In those days, this is 1970 and 71. There's no satellite. You had to use a telephone company long lines, which were very expensive. So the only games we could afford to broadcast were the 9 against the Dodgers and the 9 against the Giants. And so that's what we would do, 18 games each year in 70 and 71. And so I did the play-by-play with Duke Snyder as my color guy. Duke had been one of my heroes, you know, with Willie, Mickey, and the Duke, the three great center fielders in New York. So that was fun. And then in 1972, the Padres hired me full-time to join Jerry Coleman as the broadcast team.
That's kind of incredible that you got to work with Duke Snyder. I mean, did you just get packed full of crazy stories, or
feel free to unload them here, Bob?
Well, Duke, I mean, you know, he was a great player, Hall of Fame player, played most of his career, 99% of it with the Dodgers, mostly in Brooklyn and then in Los Angeles. And so Buzzy Bavezzi was the general manager of the Dodgers. And when Buzzy came to San Diego, Duke had been out of baseball for a couple of years, and Buzzy hired him in a dual role. He was like the assistant batting coach and also did color on the radio broadcast in 1969, the first year of the Major League Padres, and in 1970. And then in 71, he decided he really wanted to get back on the field. And so in 72, he ended up as manager of the Padres double-A team in Amarillo, Texas. So he got the uniform back on.
That's amazing. That's really cool to be amongst a legend like that for a couple of years.
So with your relationship with Jerry Coleman through the years, was there a certain point where you felt like this was going to work as a combo? Or how long does that take generally for a broadcaster to feel out a new partner and become really comfortable with them?
Well, with Jerry, it could not have been easier. He was a great guy. I had known his career. I didn't meet him really until 1971. We got hired in November of 1971 for the 72 season. And Jerry put me at ease immediately. I mean, I had no experience working an entire season for a team. Well, Jerry, after playing 9 years with the Yankees, had also broadcast for the Yankees, but he'd always promised his wife he would come back to California someday. She had real asthma problems back in the East. And so they came back to California in the late 60s. He worked in Los Angeles and then got the chance to get back into baseball with Buzzy and the Padres.
Okay.
It seems like you worked with Jerry for a really long time. He was obviously famous for stories and talking about this or that throughout his years with the Yankees. Is there anything about working with Jerry that stuck out to you, like one of your favorite memories of working with him?
You know, there are so many. We're talking about a legitimate war hero, you know.
He
was a Marine fighter pilot and in both the Second World War and the Korean War. And actually, he's the only baseball player who saw actual combat in both wars, the Second World War and the Korean War. God, he flew 130 missions. He had some terrible experiences. He saw his best friend blown out of the sky right in front of him in an airplane. Yeah. Had to explain what happened to his widow and so forth. So this is a guy who said the greatest thing he ever did was to serve his country as a Marine fighter pilot. Baseball, you know, was secondary to that, and that's understandable. But he made it so easy for me. When we first met, he told me, look, Bob, it's a long season and a small booth, and you really need to get along. And we did. We got along. There was never any kind of a major issue. Part of my job was to do a pregame interview on radio and also interview the star of the game afterwards. And in a lot of broadcast crews, the number one announcer, he tells his number two guy, you know, I want you to interview this guy. I want you to interview that guy. Jerry just said, look, you pick whoever you think should be on and do the interview. And so that made it as easy as it could be. And in doing the broadcast, he was the play-by-play guy. He was the number one guy. I did some play-by-play, but not as many innings as Jerry did. Eventually he would do 6 innings and I would do 3. And then the other innings, you'd just do color for each other. So he included me in everything. And I learned so much about baseball and life from Jerry Coleman. I just can't tell you.
Bob, I want to ask you, you just brought up interviews. You did a lot of them. I have lots of memories of you interviewing players. And I know that you're not supposed to pick a favorite. They're kind of like your children, right? But of course, we have to know, who is your favorite Padre you ever interviewed or watched play or anything like that?
You know, that's easy. I mean, that's Tony Gwynn.
Oh yeah, of course, right? That's kind of a softball.
He's the greatest Padre ever. Although the Padres have a young shortstop right now who could become one of the greatest players in the history of the game, not just of the Padres. Fernando Tatis Jr. I mean, this is a kid. He just turned 22 this month, and he's capable of hitting over 50 home runs a year, stealing as many bases as he wants, although they'll probably try to limit him a little bit. You don't want him to get hurt stealing a base when he's capable of hitting the ball 500 feet. Yeah. He's a terrific shortstop. He's got a great arm. He plays with such excitement and verve that he inspires the whole team. And even at the age of 22, he has not played a full season yet. I mean, last season was a full season, but only 60 games. The year before, he was injured. He was on the team the whole year, but he missed a lot of games. So roughly, he's played less than a full season, like 135 games, and he's hit 39 home runs in those 135 games. Just no telling what this kid can do. He's already been hired to be a national spokesman for Gatorade and a couple of other things. The Padres hope to sign him to a long, long-term deal. I mean, they want to keep him in San Diego forever. And right now, the Padres have the makings of a really good team. But back to your question about interviews, Tony Gwynn was so good.
Yeah.
Because whatever you asked him, he would just take off. You know, I might have to ask him two questions, three questions in a 10-minute interview. Right. And the rest was Tony talking. And he's the guy the audience wanted to hear anyway. Next to Tony, maybe would be Randy Jones, left-handed pitcher, and Tim Flannery, who did some professional broadcasting now with the San Francisco Giants after his career with the Padres and some radio in San Diego.
Yeah,
that's awesome,
Bob. You mentioned Tatis, and you know this era that we're in right now. We have an owner in Peter Seidler who has one of the higher approval ratings by fans right now than we've seen in a long time. What was it like when you were broadcasting during the transition from the previous owner to when Ray Kroc joined? It seems like he took the whole city by storm and, you know, built a better baseball product. What was that like seeing that transition?
That was refreshing.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. What's it like to broadcast for better baseball? Yeah.
You know, I love broadcasting, and any broadcaster would tell you this who does a baseball play-by-play. It's a fun job, but it's a lot more fun and more interesting when you have a team that's good, because, you know, the audience is more interested and following everything. And the Padres, it wasn't until their 10th year that they even had a winning record. Now, they began in 1969. 1978 was their first winning record. And 1984 was when they won their first division and pennant and got to the World Series. And that year in San Diego, of course, I'm in the broadcast booth, but we're told you could walk along the beaches in San Diego from Coronado to La Jolla to Mission Beach and not miss a pitch. Everybody had their portable radios going because the team was in a pennant race and it was really good. And so the whole city was just energized by this. And, you know, you only win for the first time once. And for the Padres, that was 1984. So that will always be a special year. And then 14 years later, they got to the World Series again, 1998. They had a really good team in 98, but they went up against a New York Yankee team that in New York, they were saying may have been the greatest Yankee team of all time. Whether they were or not, they were awfully good.
Yes.
And although two of the four games were very competitive, the Yankees swept the Pods in four straight.
Yeah.
This might be – oh, sorry, Trav.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, this might be like a question that you don't want to answer, but is there ever – do you remember a year broadcasting where you were just done with the team, where it was it just got to be too much and you were having to grasp at straws to make it entertaining for listeners?
Well, let me tell you what happened in May of 1973. The Padres were really bad. We were playing the Philadelphia Phillies, a doubleheader in San Diego. In fact, I can tell you the exact date. It was May the 27th. 1973. So we lose a doubleheader to this terrible team. And as Jerry and I are wrapping up the broadcast, a member of the front office came in and said, when you guys get through, come on down to the meeting room. The Padres are having a meeting. So we wrapped it up. We went down to this meeting where we were informed that the team had been sold to a Washington, D.C. grocer named Joseph Danzansky and would move to Washington at the end of the season or maybe even during the season. Hmm. So, yeah, that put a little damper on things. And, you know, it was just an awful team. They drew under about 500,000 for the whole season. Hmm. And, of course, it didn't move to Washington. Some things happened. And in a nutshell, here's what happened. The Padres had signed a 20-year lease to play at San Diego Stadium. And they had only fulfilled, this would have been the fourth year. So there were 16 years remaining on the lease. So the city manager of San Diego filed this lawsuit in court to keep the team in San Diego. And the judge ruled, no, you can't stop this team from going to Washington. But yes, the city does have grounds for damages for the 16 years remaining on this 20-year lease. That scared the daylights out of Major League Baseball. And the team was in limbo. They were actually going to be operated by the National League in 1974 when Ray Kroc was sailing on his yacht. Now, this is the founder of McDonald's, the chain, hamburger chain. So he's sailing on his yacht. He's told me this story, off Florida. And he's reading the newspaper about the Padres being for sale. And he turned to his wife, Joan, and said, Joan, I think I'm going to buy the Padres. And she didn't know anything about baseball. And she said, with a puzzled look, well, Ray, why would you want to buy a monastery? And he said, no. It's a baseball team. So the deal was consummated in about a week. He met with C. Arnold Smith, who was the owner. And Ray said, well, what do you want for it? And C. Arnold Smith gave a price. Show you how things have changed. I think it was around $11 million, about the price of a utility infielder today. Yeah. And Kroc said, we got a deal. And so he bought himself a major league team and kept the Padres in San Diego. And I'll never forget his first news conference in San Diego. It was at the Westgate Hotel downtown, a hotel owned by C. Arnold Smith. And Ray Kroc at this time is in his mid-70s. He has no PR person. He's just standing up there by himself. This room is packed with, you can imagine, the media. This is his first meeting, whatever. And so he's answering all these questions. And somebody said, well, Ray, what would you be happy with in attendance? I mean, the best the Padres have ever drawn is 644,000. You know, what would be satisfactory? And listen to this. Ray said, well, I don't know, maybe 700,000. After all, what do I need with more money? That's something else you've heard from a lot of owners, right?
I've never heard that before in my life.
But I have to expand on that because in 74, Ray was living in Chicago at this high rise right on Lake Michigan. And so he came out with a book called Grinding It Out, which was about his version, anyway, of McDonald's and what happened. Hmm. And so he waited for the Padres when they played the Cubs in Chicago, and he had this big cocktail party up in his residence. And so we were all invited, and so was all the hoi polloi of Chicago. I mean, every major sports figure in Chicago is there, including George Halas, the owner of the Chicago Bears. Remember, this is 1974. Mm. So I was sipping a drink and just observing everybody when I saw Halas walk up to Ray Kroc, and he said, Ray, you remember when you got on the microphone in San Diego and your team was getting slaughtered and you said, you know, this is the stupidest ball plane I've ever seen? And Ray said, oh, heck yes, I remember that. I got fined and blah, 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 blah. And Hollis said, you know, Ray, God, I've always wanted to do that.
Wow. Oh,
awesome. Were you in the booth when that happened?
Yes. Oh, yeah. It was the opening home game of 1974.
Now, what happens after that? Is there, in 1974, is there a PR wing of the team that starts talking to you guys? Or what is the process of, like,
damage control
in 1974? Is it just...
Yeah, that's missing quite the evolution in that, huh?
Well, I mean, damage control with who? The fans loved it. The fans loved it. And listen, one more thing to show you what an impact Ray Kroc had. That team was another bad Padre team. They lost 102 games, but they drew over 1 million people for the first time.
Wow.
That's amazing. Most people credited two things. One, Ray Kroc, and two, the Padres had acquired Willie McCovey in the offseason, and the fans came out to see Willie McCovey hit home runs. But it started the Padres on a good path, because money was not an object to Ray Kroc.
God, what a refreshing thing to hear about an owner who just wanted to have a good team.
Turns out if an owner is passionate and committed, we show up. That's the what happens.
Yeah. Our owner so far, the current owner seems to be channeling some Ray Kroc currently. Seems like money all of a sudden isn't an issue currently.
Yeah, you know, I mean, two of the main owners are the Seidler brothers, Tom Seidler and Peter Seidler. Peter is the general chairman now. They're very wealthy. And ironically, I mean, they're nephews of Walter O'Malley of the Dodgers. And so, I mean, they were brought up, but they want to beat the Dodgers so bad.
Yeah.
You know, and the Dodgers have dominated the National League West. They've won 7 consecutive National League West titles. I mean, it's hard to argue that they're not the best team in baseball. They won the World Series. They have a great team. They have all the resources in the world. And they have smart people in their front office now directing the baseball operations. And so they're really difficult to beat. But Peter Seidler is not afraid, even during a pandemic, to put his money where his mouth is and improve this team. He's the one that authorized a 10-year, $300 million deal to Manny Machado. He's the one that authorized a raise in the payroll to acquire those two pitchers, Blake Snell from Tampa Bay and Hugh Darvish from the Chicago Cubs. They're still looking for more talent. The everyday lineup is pretty good, but they ended up signing a Korean player who was considered the cream of the crop in the South Korea Baseball League to a 5-year deal, paying him $7 million a year. So he will come in and be kind of an all-around utility man. We don't know yet whether they'll be the designated hitter in the National League this year. Right now, it's not. It was just a temporary deal last year. And this is the last year of the current contract between the owners and the players, so it's something that would need to be negotiated. But anyway, there's an awful lot of talent on this team. And now with those pitchers, plus they had the Nelson Lamet, who was fourth in the balloting for the Cy Young last year, a really terrific pitcher, and unfortunately for the Padres, came down with a sore elbow right before the playoff series against the Dodgers.
Yeah,
they lost him, and they lost Mike Clevinger, another terrific starting pitcher. I'm not saying they would have beaten the Dodgers with those two guys, but it would have been much more competitive. Dodgers won 3 in a row to take that series.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think the most exciting thing about this offseason has been that. That happened. We lost to the Dodgers because our two best pitchers went down, but they go right into the offseason and they fix the problem. And that's been the most exciting thing. Do you remember a time like that throughout your career where the Padres had a disappointment like that and they went straight into the offseason gunning for it?
Not like this, no. Not like this. In 1984, when the Padres got to the World Series for the first time and lost to a really good Detroit Tigers team, they've had the misfortune of the two times they got to the World Series, they played great baseball teams. Yeah. That was a Tiger team that had started off 35-5. So anyway, they Tigers beat the Padres 4 out of 5, and we had a problem with our starting pitching. And Jack McKeon, who was the general manager at that time, made a deal to bring in Lamar Hoyt, who had been a Cy Young winner with the Chicago White Sox. And Hoyt ended up winning 11 straight games in 1985, but other things happened, and the team didn't win in 85 and didn't win again until, well, in the mid-90s, they got to the playoffs a few times, but not until 98 did they win the pennant again.
I got to ask, Bob, I mean, you know, a big formative period for us, for our age group, was the early 90s fire sale that happened. What do you remember about working around the team during the Tom Werner era that ended with the team basically stripping away its top talent and leaving Tony Gwynn basically by himself? What do you remember about being on the broadcast while that was happening?
Well, we were personally devastated, but it's our job to try to make the games as entertaining as you can. You know what? When you're that bad, I mean, you're talking about Gary Sheffield and Fred McGriff your buddy Ryan Klesko that you said you liked, and all these guys traded off, and the one guy we got in return, which really helped, was a fellow named Trevor Hoffman. And Trevor turned out to be a Hall of Fame relief pitcher, so good that they named the National League Reliever of the Year Award now the Trevor Hoffman Award. So they did come away with a great player in Trevor Hoffman, but they gave up Gary Sheffield to get him, and Sheffield had won a batting title. He was a great player. He's a possible future Hall of Famer. So, yeah, they were trading away, and it was all a salary dump. And it discouraged the fans. It discouraged interest. It was a really down time. I was concerned at that point about the future of baseball in San Diego. But then another great owner bought the team, John Moores. And John was a big baseball fan, and he put a lot of money into it in the beginning. They made this huge trade with the Houston Astros. The Astros were cutting salary at the time. And it brought in Steve Finley and Ken Caminiti. They were the two main guys. Yeah. And they were like cornerstones of the team that ended up winning the division in 96 and then winning the pennant in 98.
Well, go ahead, Nick.
No, I didn't. Just go for it.
Oh, I was just going to say, you've seen so much baseball, obviously, way more than any of us have ever seen. And you've seen so many different teams over the years. I'm really interested to know what would be your favorite non-Padre that you got to watch through the years?
Favorite non-Padre? Well, again, I can give you the exact date. It was May the 28th, 1948. So you guys were just young men at that point. But anyway, I was 10 years old. Our family was living in Arlington, Virginia, and my dad took me to my first Major League Baseball game. It was the original Washington Senators against the Boston Red Sox. And I remember that Washington won the game 2-1. Eddie Yost of Washington hit a triple. But the main thing is my dad said, "See that number 9 for Boston? He's the greatest hitter in baseball." Well, that was Ted Williams. So at the age of 10, I couldn't believe I was in the same hemisphere with the greatest hitter in baseball. And so I just started following his career from that point on. I had no idea that he was born and raised in San Diego. And that I would eventually meet him in San Diego. He was also a Marine fighter pilot and a good friend of Jerry Coleman's. Jerry's Yankees used to have some pitch battles with Ted Williams and his Red Sox in the late 40s and in the 50s. Ted Williams was the guy.
Well, hey, Bob, are you aware that online right now there's in what they call Padres Twitter? You should join. No, but there's a real discussion about why, you know, just asking the question, why isn't Bob Chandler in the Padres Hall of Fame? Is that something that you think about or that you've heard about, that there's a real movement of people that grew up listening to you and watching you, wondering when you're going to get in and why you're not in already? I honestly don't know who
decides on that, but sure, I would be truly honored. I really would if I was honored by the Padres Hall of Fame. I think Ted Leitner, who just retired yesterday, is a slam dunk to be in the Hall of Fame. It would be a great honor. But when I look at the guys who are in it, you know, the Tony Gwynns and Trevor Hoffman and Steve Garvey, people like that, they're the elite. I'm not at that level, but I would say this. Not everybody in the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame is as good as Babe Ruth either. You know? Yeah, that's true. So if it happens, I would be thrilled beyond saying. But I mean, I have nothing to do with it. You know, only if they decided to include me, that's all. But listen, the way I look at it, I was so lucky. I got to do exactly what I wanted for a living: broadcast Major League Baseball. I got to do it in the city I love, San Diego, California, and for the team that I watched grow from the beginning, even back to the Coach League days. And so I really feel like I'm one of the luckiest guys around.
Well, I think I speak for everybody on the podcast. We think you should be in the Hall of Fame. I didn't even realize you weren't until a few years ago, but yeah, you're part of the Padres family to us. And we just, you know, we're really grateful that you gave us some time to tell some old stories and talk to us about Padres baseball. Thanks a lot, Bob.
Hey, it's welcome. You're so welcome. All you guys ask really good questions. I appreciate it. It's always fun to talk to people who know what they're talking about when they ask you questions, and you guys do.
Yeah, well, hey, maybe we'll have you back on sometime and dig more into like the actual season that's going on.
You know, it has a chance to be a magical season. They don't always work out, but at least I think the ingredients are there for it to happen.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to the Kept Faith podcast. For Dallas Travis, thanks again, Bob. We're just honored to speak to you and have some really great stories on our show. So, check us out at thekeptfaith.com. Dallas has some writing up this week, and we're going to be doing some Ted Leitner writing coming out next week, and a cool guest in the following weekend. So, yeah, just check us out, and thanks for listening. Keep the faith.